It's fairly mature on cover crops, and it comes from a kind of a certain mindset. We had had a 5-year drought in Montana from about 98 to 2002. And so coming out of that drought, we thought, man, look, if we can't grow a crop every year, can we do something, to grow a partial crop and maybe build soil and do something a little bit more agronomically sustainable. This is about economics, so, and I'm going to focus on that. Anton Beckerman is a real talented economist and helped me with a lot with the numbers behind this. As a matter of fact, he used to work for SAS in North Carolina, so he was really helpful. This is the study in the background that I'm going to be telling you about. Just so to orient you, we got a summer fallow problem in Montana. If you look at a four-state and two-province region, the Northern Great Plains, what's happened to summer fallow from the 1920s to modern times, peaked in 1971, and it's in pretty steep decline everywhere since, except for north-central Montana. So that top line is summer fallow acreage from 98 through 2016, and so it looks completely intransigent, doesn't it? I mean, it doesn't agree with that sort of region-wide trend, but you know, at the bottom I've got pulse crop acres ticking up, and then if I look at what's happened to CRP acres that have come down, you know, and there's probably an obligate summer fallow step through coming out of that CRP. If I did this on a percentage basis, it might not be quite as intransigent, but it's still a problem. So, you know, the question we had back in 2003 is, can we green up that Kim fallow period? Is there something we could do to grow part of a crop, grow pea till flowering, then terminate it? You know, we've got good nitrogen fixation that we could get in that environment. Essentially, then we're trading nitrogen for water. And that's a picture of an actual herbicide terminated pea cover crop in north central Montana in our driest region. So that was the idea. And maybe, hopefully, we're building soil at the same time, right? So we're doing something positive for nitrogen cycling, but can we also make some gains on soil? So I'm going to show you our long-term study at Bozeman. A quick slide here on the materials and methods. It's been, as I said, it's been going since 2003. Six systems I'm going to show you in this next slide. We've got a tilled fallow wheat system. Then we go to a no-till or a chem fallow wheat system, take away the tillage. We take away the fallow in system three, so now we've got continuous wheat. We add some diversity in system four by putting pea to grain. And then we did a couple extra treatments where we harvested pea for hay or just sprayed it out for a cover crop. And so I'll be emphasizing those systems in blue. Important to note that we managed the entire study as a split plot between full and a half recommended nitrogen. And then I think we got a pretty good handle on the economic returns to land management. It's pretty well captured with Anton's help. One unique aspect for Montana wheat production is protein premiums really matter in Montana. They don't matter so much in Kansas, but they matter in Montana. And they can matter to the extent of 50, 60 cents a bushel under steep premium discount curves, or it might only be 5 cents in flat years. So with Anton's help, we're able to factor in the steep and flat protein discounts also. And so what that let us do, so here's these same systems across the bottom. Fallow wheat with the T is fallow wheat tillage, you know, fallow wheat no-till, continuous wheat, and then the P systems on the right. Each one of those boxes, so I've got dollars per acre on the y-axis, and that's summed returns over 4 years. And the reason, this is actually years 7 to 10 of that study, we reasoned that we had some equilibration or some transition effects that it should have been solved by the time we get to year 7. So I'm looking at a full 4-year cycle. It's actually two spring crops and two winter crops during that 4-year cycle. And each of those boxes represents the mean response of both the high, and or so the full and the half nitrogen rate, or including also the economic adjustment for steep and flat protein discounts. So we sort of have a 2x2 matrix of two nitrogen rates, two protein schedules. That gives us four different economic numbers for the same system. And so that box is the mean plus or minus the standard error, the tails are the highest value of those four situations or the lowest. And so what I wanted to point out in this slide is that if you look over at the P systems, they're just not much spread amongst those values. the way they backstop yield and protein, we ended up getting kind of the same economic number no matter what situation we ran them through, where we had a lot more scatter in the wheat-only systems. So we've actually got a, I should have put the citation there, I've got a paper out on that from Agronomy Journal 2015 that will give you more detail on this. Of course, the thing that stands out is that pea wheat system, right? That's sitting way up there above everything else. These two, you know, especially here's, I'm going to take a chance on this, here's our pea cover system. You know, that's doing as well, I knew that would happen, that's doing as well as the no-till wheat system and a little better than the tilled wheat system. So that's a kind of a positive story, right? You know, if we were building soil, we did something there that we didn't at least get in trouble with economics, and I think we could actually manage that cover crop more cheaply. Here's the next four-year cycle. And so that beautiful resilience that I saw with the pulses in that first four-year cycle that we looked at, it's gone. But I've got this new box way over on the right, right? So it's the same setup, but now I've got a pea wheat with an asterisk or a comma beside it. That's actually a 10-year CRP plot that we converted to a pea wheat system starting in 2013, and I ran it through these same kinds of two protein schedules, two nitrogen levels, and not much scatter amongst the response. And that has a lot to do with the fact that it was actually alfalfa. We planted a very low rate of creeping rooted alfalfa, but it took over that CRP plot, and so it just the nitrogen provision coming out of that CRP plot really quietened down those different responses at different nitrogen levels. So, in the earlier time, chem fallow does better than till fallow. The crop diversity, though, again, right? That pea wheat system is hanging way up there, and you notice that's the same system. That box way over on the right is now the same system for the last 4 years, and it's not doing nearly as well coming out of CRP. That's because we've had some pretty significant yield hangovers due to too dry a soil coming out of that CRP. So why was it so resilient in that first four-year cycle and not so much in the second four-year cycle? I think I'm just going to show you a couple quick slides here. I'm supposed to focus on economics, but I think to tell that story, I have to look at nitrogen. And so this is just two treatments here that I'm looking at. The gray bar is the chem fallow treatment. The green bar is the pea cover crop or green manure treatment at both the full on the left, full rate of nitrogen versus half rate of nitrogen on the right. And the actual nitrogen rates in pounds per acre are down below that. And if you look at that green bar at the half rate, that was gave us the same yield as the chem fallow at the full rate of nitrogen. And then you look at what those fertilizer rates were, and it was 124 pounds versus zero. It actually, according to our soil test and nitrogen credits, we didn't have to apply any nitrogen in that pea cover crop. And so it made quite a difference. 2010 was a very wet spring. And so when I went out and looked at my wheat plots, late May, they were starting to look pretty chlorotic. I think we'd had a fair bit of denitrification. And every treatment was looking chlorotic except for this pea cover crop that stayed vigorous and green the whole time. And I think that 1 year really colored the economics of that four-year cycle. And so his proteins followed the same pattern as yield. Had a graduate student, Justin O'Day, who looked at potentially mineralizable nitrogen. You can see the difference. You know, that's an indication of how much that soil can supply nitrogen over the season. Or if we add the actual measured nitrate to it to a 2-foot depth, you get a sense that that was just a much nitrogen-rich, a nitrogen-rich situation that really made a difference in that crop during a wet year. We haven't had a wet year since. Did we build soil? This is a paper that came out in 2017, Rick Engel led. Same system, kind of the same setup. You know, the tilled fallow wheat actually lost carbon from our baseline. The two blue arrows over on the right, that's our two pea systems that were either terminated early for hay or cover crop. And we didn't build soil. You know, we maintained it in some of the continuously crop systems. But so that goal of, we did a good job with the nitrogen, but the carbon, not so much. And so then that was down in Bozeman where I get a lot of rainfall. And when I'm thinking about that fallow system, I'm actually thinking about this region up north. So I really should be testing it up there, right? And it's a drier region. We get 16 inches of rainfall in Bozeman. These areas, I don't know that they quite do 12 inches a lot of years. So it's quite a bit drier. Just to reinforce that point, I'm going to take a chance here again. I know you'll come. Come on. This is Bozeman down here. You know, that kind of rainfall. And these two studies are done up here in the between Dutton and Big Sandy. So much drier, some of the driest farmland that we have in the state, but it also happens to be 50% of our wheat acres, so it's pretty important. Materials and methods, very similar. We had four of the same systems that we had at Bozeman. We did four nitrogen rates. I'm going to show you just the same two nitrogen rates that I showed you at Bozeman, half X and one X, an exact same kind of economic analysis. Here's what those charts, again, the same kind of graph here at the Dutton, a very heavy clay, high nitrogen site. This producer used a lot of fertilizer, and it was evident by the measuring nitrate in the soil profile. This is summed returns over 6 years, so we didn't have a grow-in or a transition period. We just looked at it right from the get-go at that northern site. Fallow wheat, no-till, doing better than continuous wheat. That same, under the same four situations, right? High and low nitrogen rate, steep and flat protein discount curves. And there's my pea cover system way over on the right. It's doing significantly worse than the Kemp Fallow system, so not the same story as Bozeman. This was a high nitrogen site. It was really cranking nitrogen out of that system, but it did not pay off. It actually exacerbated haying off or firing off of the wheat, so the nitrogen it was producing actually hurt us. This is and I just got the data for the year six yesterday, so I didn't have time to, if I had a couple more weeks, I could have put it in this slide. But the big sandy site, loamier site, low nitrogen site, same kind of story. I don't want to lose track of that pea wheat system, or in the case of Big Sandy, the pulse wheat system. We actually used lentils there 1 year instead of peas. That pea wheat system is still what's really working very well economically. But our pea cover system way over there on the right, even though it did a little better than, had a nitrogen responsive soil and a very quiet response there where nitrogen was limiting, it's not doing as well as the Kemp Fallow system. And I think that's... So conclusions, pulse wheat rotations have been economically superior, and we've seen that both in that wetter site of Bozeman and the two drier sites up north. We've been asked to continue that by a grower group to continue that study up at Big Sandy because they want to see it through a couple of drier years. We've had fairly timely rainfall, and so maybe that's why it's working so well. Peat cover crop provided soil resilience in both high and low rainfall environments, but the water cost was problematic in the low rainfall environment. And then this is what producers have been doing with their acres in Montana. So I had this idea that we might, switch some fallow to pea cover crop, but, they've just kind of moved right on past, and they're growing peas and lentils and chickpeas as full grain crops. And so that initial five-year drought seems to have left the memory of most folks, and so they're actually making quite a lot of profit with these pulses in their rotation. And that's it. If I've got time for questions, I'll take one or two. Bill?
Yeah, very interesting. I think that this pulse story in Montana is really incredible. And you showed the economics. I'm curious, how much nitrogen reduction are they having to put into the soil with that rotation versus wheat fallow?
Yeah, so it's a good question. And I've got Mac Burgess actually led a study of 12 on-farm or 12 farms in an on-farm study in Montana that actually asked that question from both an economic and an energetic perspective. And it turns out most growers aren't backing off on their nitrogen rates as much as you'd think. I push them all the time to, if you want a nitrogen credit to go away, all you got to do is fertilize more, right? And so I think they could be taking more nitrogen credits in their systems. I think the average was 7 pounds. Or it was not a very big number of what they were backing off. In our studies, behind peas or lentils, we take a credit in the 15 to 20 pound range. We've tried proportional, like if you get higher pea yields, we take a higher credit. That doesn't work. It's some sort of a flat credit response when you go to grain. With cover crop biomass, that proportional response probably does work. And then when we do the cover crop bill, we're actually taking much larger nitrogen credits, like in the range of 30 to 40 pounds. And at least at the Bozeman study, we're pretty sure we were underestimating the amount of nitrogen that was getting cycled from that pea cover crop. But at the same time, you saw we weren't building carbon. So we've just rejigged that study to add a mixed cover crop so we get more carbon inputs. Sorry, that was a long answer. Yeah. Kent, I can get you any time. That's way at the back.
And I need to talk to you after, so I have a few questions. But I was just curious, when you're planting, can they plant these pea crops? Is it the same equipment they're planting wheat with as far as like spacings go?
Yeah, no, the equipment's pretty standard for peas. For lentils, you need some specialized harvesting equipment, a land roller, but otherwise, no, it fits pretty well in the system.
And, so and they're just harvesting it with a small grain combine?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. How am I doing, Clayne?
Just one more question.
Sharon?
Yeah, I've got a question about your chem fallow, and are they worried about resistant weeds, and have you been able to change up some of the herbicides and other things that you've thought about?
You know, I have. We are becoming worried about resistant weeds, especially kochia. And pulses actually don't help very much with kochia. As a matter of fact, they can make that problem worse. And so I haven't thought hard enough about that. Very good question. I would say in the main, I actually see pretty clean pulse fields in Montana. I mean, I'm always amazed at actually how good a job the farmers do. I mean, I just, because I don't, well, I try to do a pretty good job on my plots, but our plots aren't always as clean as the fields that I see around the state. So something to be considering for sure.
Thank you.